This is a coastal story. Written and presented by Charlie Connolly. Whenever he'd make his way out to Penynnis Head, Victor Trenwith was following in his father's footsteps. The spit of land on the south side of St. Mary's, the largest of the Isles of Scilly, was the first landfall encountered by the steamer that sailed between Penzance and the island's main harbour at Hughtown. While there was a lighthouse there, there was no foghorn. At least, not in the conventional sense. Just like his father Henry before him, Vic Trenwith was the foghorn. Paid a retainer by the Isles of Scilly Steamship Company and its predecessor, the West Cornwall Steamship Company, Trenwith, father and son, provided a vital service from the 1880s right up into the 1950s, making sure that when sea fog descended, the steamers stayed clear of the rocks. So what was it about the Trenwiths that made them the best men for the job? They were both accomplished buglers. Henry, known as Harry, had moved to the islands as a young boy in the 1860s. He became a dedicated member and later leader of Scilly's first brass band, and it seems he liked to go out to Penynnis Head in order to practice. There he was out of earshot of long-suffering neighbours, but within earshot of the captain, crew and passengers of the ships sailing in and out of the harbour. Now, whether it was Harry's idea or the shipping company's is lost to history, but whenever the island was shrouded in fog and he heard the plaintive wail of the vessel's foghorn in the distance, Harry would walk out to the end of the headland, lay his instrument case on the ground, pick up his bugle and start to play. And there he would stand, alone in the mist, going through his repertoire of calls and tunes to an audience invisible, until he'd hear the steamer give a short toot on its whistle to let him know he'd been heard. It's not clear when Vic took over his father's duties. He was born in 1901 and began learning the bugle from the age of five, so it's likely that the pair shared the role for a while. Harry died in 1932 at the age of 75, so Trenwith Jr. would have taken over permanently at some point, probably by the 1920s. Vic was a well-known local character and a busy man. He became the island's first taxi driver, so on foggy days, once he'd bugled successfully into the murk, he'd have to hot-foot it back to his vehicle in time to meet the arriving passengers. From the late 1930s, he started giving bus tours of the island, which only had 6 miles of road. Vic was also a member of the lifeboat crew on St. Mary's, and in 1927 was part of a dramatic rescue when an Italian steamer went down in a storm. Mussolini sent medals to Vic and his colleagues in gratitude for their bravery. The only time the Trenwith human foghorn failed in some 70 years was in September 1951, when the Cylonian, carrying 54 passengers, arrived in a particularly thick fog, slightly off course and too far out to hear Vic's bugle. The ship sailed past St. Mary's and with a screeching and groaning of metal wedged itself between rocks just off the island of St. Agnes. Fortunately, there was little damage, and the passengers were taken off by the lifeboat. The Cylonian was able to float off on the next tide. At sea, certainly in the days before radar, fog can be as dangerous as a storm. It conceals landmarks and can even snuff out a lighthouse beam. Fog looks harmless enough. It's a visible stillness, one you can't touch. A gathering of water droplets so tiny they can hang in the air. It would take 7 billion of them to make a teaspoonful of water. They materialise when the air temperature and dew point are close enough together to form what's essentially a ground-level cloud, as if the heavens have been drawn down to the earth. In a thick sea fog, one that leaves a grainy, sticky feeling on the skin and where vision is reduced to a few yards, there's always a serious risk of running aground or colliding with another vessel. In that eerily silent stillness, disaster can be just seconds away. Sound was the only chance of warding off calamity. But the bells that were rung, and even the pots and pans bashed together by crews, were never usually enough. There was even one example during the 19th century of a pig suspended from a mast by its hind legs to keep it squealing until a fog had lifted. Thank goodness for the invention of the foghorn. It was devised in Canada but forged in Scotland. Robert Fowlis was born in Glasgow in 1796. When he was 21, his wife and their baby both died during childbirth, an experience so traumatic that Fowlis fled halfway across the world to escape the memory. Boarding a ship to America, he'd intended to make for Ohio, but a storm forced the vessel north to Halifax, Nova Scotia. He stayed put in Halifax for a while, scratching a living as a portrait artist, before becoming the deputy land surveyor at St. John's, New Brunswick. It was there that his fortunes began to look up. In 1825, he opened New Brunswick's first iron foundry. He married again, had a daughter, became involved with some of Canada's earliest steamships, opened a school of the arts in the town, and even found the time to patent a gas lighting system for lighthouses. But his greatest contribution to posterity came about purely by chance. One night in 1853, when a dense fog had rolled in off the Atlantic, he was making his way home when, as he drew nearer to the house, he could hear his daughter practicing the piano. And it sounded odd, somehow. He realised that while he couldn't hear any of the high notes, the lower register was reaching him loud and clear through the fog. By the time he got home, he was already wondering whether he could turn this discovery into an audible beacon for ships lost in the fog. Before long, he devised a steam-powered horn that produced a low-frequency sound able to be heard up to 10 miles out to sea. He lobbied the St. John's Board of Trade, handed over his plans, and suggested the most effective location for the equipment. The board was delighted, but gave the plans and the go-ahead to somebody else, who set up the foghorn in 1859 and then took the applause and the cash that was rightly due to Fowlis. Although he was eventually credited by the town for his work, albeit 5 years later, for some reason Fowlis never patented his foghorn. An American realised this, took out the patent himself, and made a fortune. When he died in 1866, Fowlis was still locked in legal battles over his invention. Bells and guns had always been the most common form of fog warning, but that took manpower, and manpower cost money. It's not even as if the bells and guns worked particularly well. Ships were still running aground and into each other in fog all over the world. An automated system was clearly the answer. The first steam-powered foghorn in Britain was sighted in 1876 at St. Abb's Head Lighthouse on the east coast of Scotland. And within a few years, John Northey of Toronto invented the diaphone, a two-note call, using compressed air technology inspired by Wurlitzer organs. These became the saviour of ships across the globe, saving lives in numbers we can't even guess at. Many of these horns became familiar local landmarks. The foghorn at Bodham, a Scottish village just south of Peterhead, was known as the Bodham Coo for its bovine lowing. If you lived far enough away, the sound could even be comforting, mooing away through the night, keeping mariners safe, and seeping gently into your dreams. For all their importance in saving lives, when fog really set in, the sound could become a bit trying. In 1913, the Mumbles foghorn near Swansea sounded for 111 consecutive hours. That's more than 4 days, non-stop, every 45 seconds. In a notoriously foggy June in 1953, the Bodom coup itself sounded for 238 hours. For a period in 1967, the foghorn at the entrance to Southampton Water would go off on clear, sunny days for no apparent reason. It turned out that the horn, which was controlled remotely from a shore station by radio, was being triggered by walkie-talkies at an oil refinery 4 miles away. The residents of Bexhill-on-Sea petitioned the Elder Brethren of Trinity House in 1928, asking them to reduce the volume of the new diaphonic foghorn on the nearby Royal Sovereign light vessel. Mournful Mary, they called it. The signatories included farmers several miles inland who'd been roused in the foggy night, believing one of their cows to be in distress. "Some persons are easy sleepers," read the petition, "while others are susceptible to nocturnal noise and yield themselves to Morpheus with the greatest difficulty." People even wrote poems about it, the quality and content of which suggests they were genuinely sleep-deprived. With correspondents citing an evil spirit there is no contending with, Trinity House moved the lightship to a new location, replacing it with a vessel whose foghorn was less of a nemesis to Morpheus. Bexhill slept peacefully again. A similar petition had been raised at Tynemouth in 1908. Not about the volume this time, but rather a foghorn that was weird, unmusical and discordant. The local Harbour Lights, Buoys and Beacons Committee rejected the appeal on the grounds that it was not discordant. Rather, it just had a distinctive character. Increases in navigational technology have meant that since the 1990s, the thunderous lowing of the foghorn has pretty much vanished from our coasts. Scotland switched off most of their foghorns in 1995. Ireland followed suit in 2011. The Bodom coup itself was finally silenced in 2000. A few horns still sound occasionally in England and Wales, but the habitual, comforting, throaty blast echoing into the dark night or the milky opaqueness of day is largely a thing of the past. Perhaps the horn's greatest epitaph can be found in a recording made one dark, foggy night in 1982 on the edge of the North Sea, when a Dutch radio station coordinated an hour-long live misthorn concert, linking up transmissions from 9 foghorns along the coasts of France, Belgium, the Netherlands and Germany. It's actually quite beautiful, evocative of a dark night on the North Sea. Smoky fog drifting across the water. A song of safety. A wordless ode to the sea and the protection of those on it from its most deceptive element. It's almost a musical version of the shipping forecast. If the shipping forecast is poetry, then this is its soundtrack. Keeping people safe when they're vulnerable, whoever they are. As for Vic Trenwith on Pennines Head, the Cylonian was replaced by a new vessel in 1955, a ship that came equipped with radar. After 70 years uninterrupted fog-bound service, the Trenwiths could stand down their bugles. Vic died in 1987 and is commemorated by a stained glass window in St Mary's Church in Hughtown. It shows St Christopher wading through water carrying the Christ child. There's a bugle on the boulders beneath. That was a coastal story. and I'm Charlie Connolly. You can find out more about fog and foghorns in my book Bring Me Sunshine, published by Abacus. I've posted a couple of poems from the Great Bexhill Foghorn Protest of 1928 on the Facebook page. Just search for Coastal Stories Podcast. If you're enjoying these slices of maritime life, do rate and review wherever you can, and tell people about them so they can cock an ear too. The waves you're hearing were recorded at Deal on a flood tide on the 14th of March 2020.